In this case, it's United States versus Brubaek or Escobar. Appellant ready to argue?
Yes, Your Honor.
The government?
Yes, Your Honor.
Appellant may argue.
Chief Judge Stuckey, members of the court, may it please the court. I'm Captain Alex Hess. Captain Andor Kiss and I represent the opponent in this case, Sergeant Jacob Brubaek or Escobar. If I may reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Go ahead.
Your Honor, Executive Order 13825 mandated the convening authority act on the sentence in this case. Its failure to do so was jurisdictional error because it meant judgment was not entered into the record under Article 60 Charlie in accordance with the rules prescribed by the President. When we talk about jurisdiction, it's important to remember that we are Article 1 courts of limited statutory jurisdiction defined entirely by the statute. But as the Supreme Court also recently reminded us in Briggs, ours is a uniform code. And so when we look at a statutory provision, it's important to read it in conjunction with its natural reference. But in this case, Article 66 doesn't just have a natural reference, it has an explicit reference in it. It's Article 60 Charlie. And so it's important when we consider the jurisdictional statute that we also look at what is in Article 60 Charlie. And it's our reading of Article, of the jurisdictional error here is that the failure to comply with Article 60 Charlie in entry of judgment before the convening authority takes action on the case means that the entry of judgment was essentially void, and therefore the court was deprived of jurisdiction. It's also important to note that Congress, for the very first time,
which court was deprived of jurisdiction? The trial court or the CCA or both of them or what?
The CCA, Your Honor.
The CCA.
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead.
Congress for the very first time drew this explicit line. In the old Article 66 did not have a reference to Article 60 in it, the way that Congress wrote in Article 60 Charlie to the statute here. What makes the judgment effective in this case is essentially two things. The first is that the judgment was entered prematurely. The condition precedent to entering judgment according to the rules prescribed by the President was action by the convening authority. And so whatever the military judge, whatever she was entering in this case, was simply premature. But the other problem is the judgment was facially defective, because the judgment, as Article 60 Charlie lays it out, consists of different component parts. It's a statement of trial results. As modified or supplement by an action or by any sort of post-trial rulings that may happen. So as we can tell from the face of this document itself, the judgment was invalid. It was void and therefore deprived the CCA of its jurisdiction. Some of the cases that the government cited in its brief, going back to the Article 25 issues, where this court considered is an error jurisdictional, or is it simply a procedural error? And I think those cases are instructive in a way because what this court has looked at is the nature of the underlying right that the article seeks to protect. In the Article 25 cases, it was the right of the accused to choose whether to be tried by a panel or by a military judge, not the ministerial act of him putting it on the record what his election was. In this case, the underlying right that's being protected is the President's mandate that the convening authority make a decision on the sentence going forward that continues on to the court. And as this court has explained in cases past, it is the accused's last best chance at relief at this stage. And so to deprive them of that really voids the judgment. Just briefly, I also want to touch on the government's argument that, in fact, what the convening authority did here was perfectly permissible. The notion that no action is actually action. That fails on several fronts. But the biggest thing the point that we want to make is under the old rules, there's really a closed universe of decisions that the convening authority had to make. They had to either approve, disapprove, commute, or suspend. Under the new rules, he doesn't have to approve. He doesn't even have to take action. So what's not clear from the document we have in front of us is, did the convening authority ever make a decision in the first place? The President has directed him to endorse the sentence. He is the owner of the court-martial from referral through action. And the failure of him to sign off on what was happening is fatally defective in this case. And, you know, a plain reading of what the convening authority wrote is simply that there was no action here.
Why can't we just interpret what he did here as just not disturbing the findings and such?
But when we look at, I think under the new rules, if that's where we're operating under, well, let me take a step back. Article, under the old rules, which is what applies here, he has to have done one of those four things. And this court, in cases like Scott, Polite, and some of those other similar cases, where the convening authority has been silent on a portion of the sentence. Even there, it didn't say, well, we assume that he's approving it. The action was incomplete, so it would get sent back. And I think that that's the same problem we're running into here. We don't know what the convening authority's decision is, or even if he made a decision at all. And this court has to have that in front of it. Certainly the CCA has to know what it is that what the convening authority was doing. It's sort of like if they received a non-verbatim record of trial. Everybody has to have the same understanding of what the sentence is in order for the CCA to be able to know what portion of the sentence is correct in law and fact and should be approved. And so,
is there any suggestion in the record that the CCA had any confusion about what the findings of sentence were?
No, and it's, I think there is a problem. You know, if we look at the court, to answer your question, Your Honor, no, the CCA didn't really talk about it. They just stuck this in the footnote, basically. But there is some confusion about what the sentence is actually before the court in this case with respect to the rank reduction. Because if you think about what we have a rank reduction where the convening authority is silent on whether he's approving it or made no decision at all. The government has said, well, the automatic rank reduction will kick in because of Article 58 Alpha. But actually, that doesn't work either in this case. The prior version of Article 58 Alpha, which is what applies here, the automatic rank reduction only occurs upon approval of the discharge. And once again, we don't have an approval of the discharge in this case. So there is ambiguity, there is incompleteness, certainly at the very least with respect to the rank reduction of what is properly before the CCA at this point. That is simply a further problem with this case.
Counsel, can I just get a step back for just one second? Your interpretation of Section 6 of the executive order is that the old version of Article 60 applies to offenses that occurred before 2019, and the new version applies to offenses after 2019. When did the President get the authority to draw that distinction? I'm looking at the Act, and it seemed to say that the President can promulgate the rules for for cases where action had been taken under the UCMJ beforehand. But are you equating action to, or is the President equating action to committing the offense?
So I think there's a couple answers to that question where he gets his authority, Your Honor. The first is, generally, obviously, the President has rulemaking authority. I think we all know about that. Article 60, Charlie, also begins with a delegation from Congress saying, you know, entry of judgment will be done in a manner prescribed by the President. And he has prescribed those rules, and I think that that involves the condition precedent of entering judgment. But finally, or entering action on the sentence, I'm sorry. But there's also an additional line of cases where the President has the authority to grant additional rights. This is the Lopez and the, I'm going to butcher the name, but Chechen case. As long as those rights don't conflict with what Congress did. And the President is saying you must take action on the sentence, as was required under the prior version of Article 60, doesn't conflict with what Congress has said about what you have the discretion whether or not to make a decision. He simply removed that, and for the benefit of the accused, says you will take action on the sentence. So I think under any of those three provisions, the President was authorized to issue this executive order, Your Honor.
Can I ask another question on... is it your position that the current versions of RCM 1109 and 1110 apply?
Yes, Your Honor.
So we apply the old version of Article 60, but we apply the current rules. And your position is that they're not inconsistent because you can still take action. You just don't have to under those rules. So.
Under the current rules, right. You don't have to. On this one, the President just said you must. And the rules obviously are still built around, you know, when you take action, what do you do? And so it's still, the directive that you must take action still fits with the rule, the new rules, I should say.
And on the issue, I'm sorry to dominate the question, but on the issue of jurisdiction, why doesn't Article 66 just determine whether there's jurisdiction, the current version of Article 66?
Well, it, certainly it is the jurisdictional statute, but our position is when 66 has an explicit reference to 60 Charlie in the very sentence that's talking about jurisdiction and says we get jurisdiction from a judgment entered under Article 60 Charlie, the natural reference is, okay, well, was this judgment entered under 60 Charlie? And because it didn't comply with the rules that the President laid out for entering a judgment under 60 Charlie, it can't be that, it must be that this judgment is void, and that is what deprives the court of the CCA jurisdiction, Your Honor.
What's the effective date of the rules?
I'm sorry, sir?
What's the effective date
of
the statutory changes in the and the rules?
So the MJ...
For this case.
Right, so
this case all took place before 2019. The alleged misconduct all took place in 2018.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. But nothing was done until 2019, right? No charges weren't referred or referred or anything until 2019.
I'd have to check on the referral date, Your Honor, but it, certainly what matters is the referral date.
The referral was like May of 2019?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And so that's why we have this, why the executive order applies.
But the statute, and I think Judge Maggs brought this up, the statute has a provision that basically says that the authority to apply this to pre-2019 conduct only applies if some action was taken in before 2019, and is there any action?
Well, I think, like I said earlier, I think what the President was doing was he was affording these additional rights to these accused.
Affording additional rights doesn't mean he can just blow off the statute, does it?
Well, not if the additional rights are not contradictory to the statute. And that's, I think, effectively what he was getting at was, this is in addition to, it doesn't, as long as it doesn't contradict, that's okay if it's to the benefit
of the people. Well, it sounds like it is contradicting, because no action was taken before 1 January 2019. Therefore, you can't apply the new rules.
But the difference is,
I mean, it's nice that he wants to be nice, but being nice can't come with it's clearly a transitional provision in the statute, and Congress put it in there for a reason. And my question is, how do you get from there to here if in fact, no action was taken before 1 January 2019, no action in the case was taken before 1 January 2019?
But I think the President has the rulemaking authority to grant an additional right to an accused, as long as it doesn't, the right here that we're talking about is the requirement to take action on the sentence. Congress says you may take action. The requirement that you must take action, I don't think, is contradictory with that. Especially since it's to the benefit of the accused. And so we think that, regardless of what's in Section 5225, which I think is what you were referring to.
I think it's 5542.
Yeah, the effective date.
5542C1.
Yes, Your Honor, yes. That, regardless of what's in there, he can, in addition, grant this right to an accused as long as the requirement to take action doesn't conflict. And so
he can be Lady Bountiful, even though the statute says something.
And, yes, and it's an important right as well.
I don't want to belabor this.
Roger.
Go ahead.
Pending any further questions from the court.
Can I ask one question? Are you familiar with the Air Force's case in Omont? Judge Posh seemed to draw a distinction, which was if the union authority wanted to take an action, well, then you'd use the old Article 60. But if you didn't, you wouldn't use the old Article 60 because the Section 6 of the executive order says that the old Article 60 applies to the extent that action is required. And I think that's awesome, but if you didn't want to take an action, then it wouldn't apply. And that's sort of put the emphasis on the to the extent language. What's your position is obviously different than that. What is wrong with Judge Posh's argument in that case?
But I think if we look at the it's Section 61, where the president very clearly says it requires action by the convening authority on the sentence, I think the portion where that authorizes the convening authority to approve, disapprove, commute, or suspend in whole or part, I think that's the portion you were referring to. I think what he's saying there is the extent they had that the limitations on clemency authority that applied before NJA 16, those continue to apply to these cases. But he wasn't saying you have the option to, you know, not approve like you do under the current rules, because action, as we understood it, under Article 60 before the NJA was always one of those four. So I think this is more, this last line is really just, you can't take additional clemency powers. You're bound by Article 60's limitations on your clemency authority, which for the most part I think is the same as the current Article 60. Pending any further questions?
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Counsel for the government.
Chief Judge Suki, members of the court, may it please the court. I am Captain Amanda Dixon, and along with Major Craig Shapira, I represent the United States. This court should affirm the decision of the Army Court of Criminal Appeals because the convening authority made a deliberate decision in appellant's case. If this court determines that the convening authority committed error when he used the language no action on the convening authority action memo, that error was procedural and not jurisdictional, and appellant forfeited this issue when he failed to allege error under RCM 1104 and cannot establish that he was prejudiced as to any substantial right. First, the convening authority absolutely made a decision in this case. The convening authority considered appellant's sentence in conjunction with both the staff judge advocate's clemency advice and appellant's waiver to seek any clemency in the case. The convening authority memorialized that command decision in a document literally titled Convening Authority Action. That memo was provided to the military judge. The military judge included that command decision on the entry of judgment. However, if this court determines that the convening authority erred, this error was procedural and not jurisdictional. Going to Judge Mag's question, in this case, Article 66, Bravo 3 provided the Army Service Corps with jurisdiction. Article 66 requires entry of judgment under Article 60C. It does not require convening authority action. Looking to Article 60C, it likewise does not require convening authority action. The military judge is simply required to account for any modification of the sentence on the entry of judgment.
But what applies here with respect to the effective date?
Based on the referral...
New, old, sort of old?
Yes, Your Honor. Based on the referral date, the new procedural rules are in place. So when we're looking at Article 66 and Article 60C, we're under the new rules. The President specifically carved out specific statutes, including Article 60, and in this case, Article 58 Alpha, which would be applicable to this case, where we would be under the old rules.
I'll ask you the same question I asked the appellant, which is under 5542 of the statute, can you do that? Since nothing was done on this case in 2018, this is a 2019 case, and it says that only if some action is taken in 2018 on the case, can you retroactively apply those rules?
With respect to the new procedural rules, yes, Your Honor. With respect to Article 60, what we're talking about here is the clemency power of the convening authority, and to go to appellant's point is they're looking at what the benefits to the accused are. It is important that the convening authority retains a broad range of clemency powers based on the earliest offense date. And that is the purpose between carving out this exception as to Article 60. However, there is not an exception to what provides the Army Court with jurisdiction in this case, which is Article 66. If the entry of judgment contains a bad conduct discharge, as it did in this case, the requirements for jurisdiction under Article 66, Bravo 3 are met. Accordingly, any error in the convening authority action did not deprive the Army Court of Criminal Appeals of jurisdiction. Assuming there was a procedural error in the convening authority action, the appellant forfeited this issue when he failed to file, failed to allege error under RCM 1104, and therefore this court should review for plain error. Under a plain error analysis, appellant is required to establish that the error was clear and obvious, and that the error prejudiced a substantial right of the accused. In this case, the error is not clear or obvious. The conflicts between and among the courts of criminal appeals demonstrate this error is not clear or obvious. In addition, and most fatal to appellant's claim is that he cannot establish prejudice, specifically appellant's right to seek clemency. Appellant does not even attempt to demonstrate his prejudice because he cannot do so. First, appellant specifically waived his right to seek clemency. And even if the appellant had requested clemency in this case, the convening authority was powerless to provide any meaningful relief. The convening authority was not able to have any effect on appellant's guide upon conduct discharge, which again was the jurisdictional trigger in this case. He had minimal authority to grant relief as to the reduction to E1, although the statute advocate correctly advised the convening authority that he could provide relief as to the rank reduction. Any relief would have been meaningless, because as soon as the convening authority approved appellant sentence as to the bad conduct discharge, the automatic rank reduction would be in place. If the convening authority erred, when he completed the convening authority action in this case, it was not clear or obvious error, and the appellant cannot establish prejudice. In conclusion, assuming error, it was not jurisdictional, and it was not prejudicial. Pending any further questions, the government respectfully requests that this court affirm the decision of the Army Court of Criminal Appeals.
Thank you, counsel. Rebuttal?
We'll waive rebuttal, Your Honor.
Okay, I have one question on rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor.
Prejudice.
Yes, Your Honor.
Where's the prejudice? Even if he erred, where's the prejudice?
Prejudice is definitely not full battle for us, Your Honor, but I will. When we talk about prejudice, that assumes that, A, there was, that this was not jurisdictional and that it was clear what the convening authority was doing. When it comes to, all we can really say when it comes to prejudice, Your Honor, is that he did have unfettered clemency authority when it came to the rank reduction. And so when this court has looked at prejudice in the past, there's always been a colorful showing of possible prejudice. And we think that, you know, there is a possibility to get sent back to the convening authority to do this. But we don't even get to prejudice if the convening authority's action is ambiguous or incomplete. There's no prejudice test under that basis. And we think that this is incomplete. It is ambiguous. And so the prejudice and plain error analysis that the government has talked about is besides the point. It just doesn't lend itself to this framework of analysis when the CCA does not know what sentence is properly before it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Of course, thanks, counsel, for both sides. Case is now submitted. Court is in recess until 09:30 tomorrow.